This episode is brought to you by Sheffield All Sport Watches. The Sheffield brand was recently revived by Jay Turkbus, an owner of an original Sheffield All Sport diver he received from his parents in 1970 when he was just 11, beginning his love of watches. As an adult, Jay used his extensive expertise in product development and marketing to revive the brand that started it all. He set out to develop watches with a high level of quality and specification at a value price. His first effort, and a successful one in July of 2023, was the debut of the Sheffield All Sport Diver 1. It had the kind of build and movement that much more expensive watches use, and his debut price of $108 was equivalent to the $13 his parents paid back in 1970. Since that debut, Sheffield has expanded to a wider range of automatics and chronos, many designed around vintage Sheffield dials of the 60s. The Sheffield well of clever and unique design remains his inspiration, as well as maintaining the goal of high-quality, very affordable range of automatic and quartz watches. Sheffield Watches, value on merit, not just price. Check out their selection at sheffieldwatches.com and mention that you found them on Switchcast. This is Switchcast Season 6. I'm your host, Doug Tabbitt, here with my co-host, Tyler Sanders, and of course, our producer, Ethan Huffnagel. I was going to use a big word to describe you, but then I realized I didn't know what it meant. So, homeschooler, just I throw in words that sound smart, but I'm not going to do that tonight. Learning. If you enjoy this podcast, help us out with the algorithms. Throw a like, share, subscribe, review, comment, whatever. And of course, Patreoners, thank you for being here. And if you're not on Patreon, please do. You get to watch us live as opposed to hearing the show later on. Ask us questions or answer our questions. That's honestly some of it. There are our data researchers as we go. Because we are not the smartest people in the room. We're just the most entertaining.
Somewhat entertaining, we'd like to think.
All right. What is fueling this podcast, Tyler?
I have some Wild Turkey 70th anniversary release. This is an 8-year-old Wild Turkey at 101, I think, proof. Delicious.
You make fun of Wild Turkey when we had our bourbon discussion.
I made fun of the people that think Rare Breed, which is a delicious bottle of whiskey, is somehow like a secret.
Is it like Corvette Rare? Then it's not really a rare breed?
Yeah, honestly, they're the type of people that would be like, I don't need any of that fancy whiskey. My Rare Breed does just fine. It's like, I don't need a fancy 911. My Corvette's great. It's like kind of the vibe.
But not rare.
Yeah, not really rare.
Not really rare. Okay.
Rare breeds everywhere.
We have a gift from Schiffer Publishing. This is the definitive history of the Mercedes-Benz C111, ooh, written by two German guys, Gerhard Heidbrink and Joachim Hack. I don't think he is a hack. I think he's actually quite smart. It's a very, very thick book. It's like War and Peace.
It's like a whole tree.
I look forward to reading it over the next course of the next 4 to 5 years.
Yeah.
I'm still working on the McLaren F1 book. That's been a couple of years. I'm a slow reader. I was going to say I'm slow, but that would...
Yeah.
Speaking of mistakes, I have to admit a mistake from one of our previous episodes where we were talking about the trucking action plan and the new executive order from President Trump. I had conflated two numbers, and I repeatedly mentioned Biden's executive orders in 2016 when he was vice president, which ironically, a number of people corrected me and said, Trump was president then. How could Biden do the executive order? Which they were wrong, too, because it's the 2016 election, but he didn't take office until 2017. But anyway, the data we referenced had a marked change in 2016, which is why I kept referencing that date. The trucking action plan took effect in 2022. So for those of you paying attention, that was a fairly big error, but don't think it affected the point we were making or that the article we were referencing made, which is the trucking action plan likely contributed to unsafe truckers and higher level of accidents caused by people with non-domicile CDLs, et cetera, and lower standards for people getting CDLs.
I did have, I don't know. I didn't talk to the driver. I didn't see the driver, but I had somebody, a trucker that was in front of me, use their hazards to indicate they were making a left-hand turn, and I almost got hit because I thought it meant I could pass them. It was a good time.
Maybe he thought, well, I could turn either way.
It's like, I don't know. I don't
turning
know.
Both ways. Let's see. In market news, an NA2 NSXR, which we can't get in the U.S. yet, sold for over $1 million recently at the Villa de Este auction. Apparently, they didn't hear my take on the podcast about how they're probably overvalued.
Your take on the podcast needs to tank the market so we can buy one. That's
why. I love the NSXR. I think it's cool. I don't want one that bad. For like $200K, I think it's cool. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that mean, though, that because it's not legal to import into the U.S. yet, that it will be even more outlandishly expensive when it becomes legal for U.S. import? Is this the U.S. money hitting early?
I'm guessing, well, I think it's a 2002 registration, so very soon it can be imported, but I would bet somebody's got one here or can get one on show and display.
Mm, that's true.
Let's see. A GT3 RS 4-liter in white, which is the least valuable color, also sold for $1 million recently on P-Car Market. Tyler, do you remember when being a millionaire was like a big deal?
I do. Now, there was music videos and everything about it.
Now it'll get you a 911 or a Honda.
Nice.
I do want to make a clarification on one of our affiliate programs, Epic VIN. Somebody commented on video, said like, man, this is a scam. It's not a comprehensive report, whatever you said it was. I want to clarify, Epic VIN is not a replacement for Carfax or AutoCheck. They are not like comprehensive history reports. They are data that Carfax and AutoCheck do not have, e.g. historical sale listings. So they might have archived private sale listings from Craigslist, something like that, or archived salvage auction listings or insurance auction sales, which include photos. So if you have a car with damage and you want to know how much damage, or like we found a Mercedes SL one time that a guy had listed with scissor doors. Huh. And we're like, yeah, no, we'll pass on that. Yeah. It's incredibly valuable as a supplement to what you already have. It is not reliable for was this vehicle in an accident or not. Even their mileage isn't reliable because they use like blockchain data. So like that data you got to throw out. It's used for like photographic history of listings and sales.
Yes. And there, I've been looking on there for some information on a certain selection of cars. And I was amazed at how much like there would just be, even in the like, hey, get a little preview, accident photo entirely totaled for like multiple cars. So it's cool as a little check.
Yeah, it is incredibly valuable. If you are a dealer or somebody who buys a lot of cars, you cannot go without it. If you're on a search like Tyler is for 996 GT3, absolutely get a subscription. Use it, but use it in addition to a regular vehicle history reporting service. Speaking of Tyler and his GT3 search, he has a little bit less money in his GT3 fund because he got engaged.
Woo! Let's go.
Woo! If you like it, then you should have put a ring on it.
I did. That's the whole point.
He did.
Oh, very excited.
Yes.
GT3 budget, very separate, though. It just won't get increased as much anymore.
Money is fungible, Tyler.
Move some things around. Look, she is in agreement that the GT3 needs to happen before the wedding. So...
All right.
Got to me a catch.
Well, you got it. It's got to happen by April anyway. So,
yeah. So we're good. No matter what, we're good.
Okay. Today, shout out June 3rd is Scott Stellman's 60th birthday.
It's a big number.
It is. More on him coming soon in a future episode. Scott Stellman is the COO founder of Gearhead Grotto, which you may remember from a previous episode. And there is more coming. We'll just leave it at that. All right, on to our main topic. First one. Let's see. Bernie Marino, local car dealer turned U.S. senator.
Yes.
Had to think about that one for a second, which branch of government he was in. His sponsored bill to make car payment interest tax deductible has made it into the budget bill, which was passed by, I believe, the House of Representatives and now going to the Senate.
Yep.
And then it will, where it is expected to pass, but there is a lot of debate back and forth. Again, we're not trying to get into politics here, but this is budgetary and it affects cars. So politics, when it intersects with cars, we'll talk about them. The gist of the bill is car payment interest should be tax deductible. And that's what's in this bill. Now, Bernie Moreno claims credit for introducing the bill, but the Republican senator in Michigan also claims credit for introducing the bill at a different time under a different name.
Ah, nice.
Both of them use these ridiculous acronyms, which I swear there is a government department that all they do is come up with names of bills where they can make a cute acronym.
And they've got to be staffed by an absolute swath of people because each one of these somehow works, and I hate it.
They don't work well. They don't work well. But, like, yes.
This one is...
USA Car.
Yes, United States Automobile Consumer Assistance and Relief Act. Or USA Car Act. Like, all right. Sure.
I have a problem with USA standing for anything other than United States of America. But they changed the A.
I don't know why. I just assume I'm so used to that meaning that you at like United States of America, I didn't even register.
I don't know. I should learn how to set off my patriotic trigger or whatever. I don't know. Anyway, so we'll give Bernie Moreno credit for it. He's our hometown senator. Well, he's not my senator. You know, I don't know who you voted for, but he's local here.
That do be factual.
I indirectly contributed to his campaign fund through doing business with the, you know, Marino companies, servicing my Volkswagen at his dealership, et cetera, et cetera. This is part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which don't get me started on that. Nothing about government largesse to me is beautiful, but yes, it definitely is big. The entire budgetary bill is 1,038 pages in its current form.
That's like a tome, like not even a novel. That is just a massive. I've read a couple of books over that many pages and it took me a long time.
Yes. It claims to reduce the deficit, reduce the increase in the deficit, reduce the spending by $1.4 trillion. But critics are coming out both ways. Elon Musk, I believe, criticized it because it doesn't cut enough and it actually increases the deficit still by multiple trillion dollars, $3 trillion approximately.
Good grief.
And Rand Paul, of no surprise to anybody, has come out saying that you're not cutting enough either and he's not going to vote on it unless it balances the budget. It you know, it's a balanced budget. Yes, so zero deficit. I don't know what term I was looking for, which is never going to happen. But let's focus on the car part of it. That's why we're here. So they want to make car interest on car loans tax deductible. Not the entire payment. You can't write off the depreciation on your car.
That'd be sick.
Unless, well, this is not tax advice. When you lease vehicles through a business for company use, you can quote unquote write it off. But talk to your accountant about that. I've seen people write off, you know, $2,000-$3,000 payments for their Ferrari lease. Whatever. That's between you and your CPA. But these are regular vehicle loans. There's a number of caveats. The deduction is limited to $10,000 per year, and it starts phasing out for income levels above 100K a year or 200 for couples. This data is from MarketWatch.com. It is also, this is important, it is an above-the-line tax deduction. When I first heard about this bill, I'm like, well, this is stupid because almost everybody takes the standard deduction instead of itemizing. So this type of thing won't affect anybody except the wealthy typically are the ones who itemize their taxes. But it's an above-the-line deduction, meaning you, even if you take the standard deduction, you can also take this, which to me is annoying in and of itself because I'm like, let's simplify the tax code. If the point of the standardized deduction was to simplify things, now we're adding complexity back into it because like you're taking a standard deduction and you're itemizing.
So you're like itemizing a little bit. Teensy bit.
Yes. Also, it is only for vehicles whose final assembly is in the United States. So it's part of this like Build Back America, whatever. Maybe that was Biden's thing. But anyway, whoever's thing that was, it's part of this.
Which now means, I think, unless this data just exists, which it probably doesn't, the government needs to keep track of what cars qualify for this deduction, which means somebody needs to manage that data set and give access to it to the IRS. And then that data needs provided to TurboTax and H&R Block and all these other companies. So like it is going to cost money to provide this data. How often does it get updated? Is it by VIN number? Do you have to enter your VIN number? Is it by like...
It's interesting you say that because later on in this article...
Oh, God, I said VIN number. I'm sorry. You can kick me off the podcast. I like smacked me in the face after I said it.
A company that analyzed this said that they thought in order for this to work, the deduction would have to be given in terms of a credit at the point of sale at the dealership, which is what is done with EVs. And it's amazing how many EVs don't qualify for the credit.
Yes.
So I think a lot of vehicles would qualify. You know, we looked at the stats a while ago when we were talking about the tariffs. A lot of vehicles, their final assembly is in the U.S., even if they're foreign companies and or foreign made parts. So I think a lot of them would qualify.
Is this also only for new cars? Yeah.
It is only for new cars, we think, but the National Independent Auto Dealers Association has petitioned to clarify the language in the bill so that it will apply to used cars as well, which also meet the criteria that they were their final assembly was in the United States.
Which also means that if you use our Lord and Savior Pentagon Federal Credit Union to get a loan on anything, the government will have to know that a 1985 Mustang GT was assembled in America. That's a reasonable assumption, but...
Something else, the government will have to know. You're filing on your taxes that you bought a car.
Yes.
The government will just know more things.
The feds, at least. I mean, the state knows when you... Obviously, because you're titled and registered and whatnot.
Sure, unless you're sovereign citizens.
Yeah. So this is all just, like, so much... management required to make this happen. And is it actually like going to benefit people?
No, it isn't. Right, according to this study, the policy change, according to, let's see, auto analyst at JP Morgan said the policy change could lead to $20 of new vehicle monthly payment relief per our calculations. And based on the effect of the tariffs, which are now actually taking effect, both domestic and foreign manufacturers are increasing their prices because guess what? All the parts for domestic cars are made not in America. It'll estimated to be $65 to $90 of monthly payment inflation, likely as a result of the tariffs. So it's a drop in the bucket. People are feeling the squeeze. This really doesn't solve anything. To me, it is just posturing. It is
pandering.
Well, yeah, patronizing.
Yeah.
It's let's look at Bernie Moreno, right? So the two senators who claim responsibility for this bill. One of them's a Michigan senator. Who's he backed by?
Yes.
Who's his lobbyists, his donors? The auto manufacturer. Bernie Moreno made his money in the car business, running new car dealers. This bill benefits new car dealers. Because anytime you can give a salesman a selling tactic, even if there's no actual value, they will milk it. Oh, you should finance. It's saving. You can write it off on your taxes.
Yes.
How many people stay in debt on their homes because, oh, it's a write-off? The interest is a write-off. Okay, well, but you're giving $1,000 to the government in order to save $250. I'm sorry, you're giving $1,000 to the bank in order to not give the government $250. The math doesn't work. Everybody thinks
that like writing off means you just like get the money back or it's like magical. Counts as it. I'm like, what do you mean?
It's a write-off. Go on that trip. It's a write-off. Yeah, no, it's still money spent. You don't spend a dollar to save a quarter. Unless it's something you want, like a Range Rover when they did the accelerated depreciation. Yeah, that's a write-off. Okay.
But it is amazing.
That Ferrari for your business.
It's amazing how many tactics are out there to influence people towards buying new cars. There's in the state, now this is a state thing, but in the state of Ohio, something that really grinds my gears, rustles my jimmies, is the fact that used, if you trade in a vehicle to a car dealer to purchase a used vehicle, you have to pay sales tax on the entire price of the vehicle rather than the difference after your trade-in.
As opposed to trading in on a new car. Some yes. states like California, it doesn't matter. You pay full tax every single time, no matter what. But you're right. They only give you sales tax credit if you buy a new car. And I feel like this is more of the same. It's incentivizing and helping out new car dealers, and it's not giving any benefit to the consumers.
Nope.
Ugh. Yep. So I think it's just lip service. Just one of those things that you throw in a big, beautiful bill.
The obs.
I feel like senators should have to read word for word any bill that they vote on. That would keep.
They'd be there for the rest of the year.
Good. That would keep government limited in its scope. All right. Shrewd negotiator.
Yes. Oh, I'm excited to talk about this because let me tell you, it's been all over my Instagram feed.
Well, then you tell me about it.
Well, so what I have seen in my Instagram feed is a mint green 996 Carrera, I think, but it's it's got the taco wing. That's where the teeth is coming from.
Kit.
It's got the aero kit.
Mm-hmm.
The description says it's unicorn color. And when you first read it, I thought
unicorn capitalized in rare factory OEM color. Sounds like a Corvette guy.
It does. But then you think if you just read that, you're like, oh, wow, they sold a 996 in mint green. That's kind of wild. The coveted 996 model year, which nobody has ever said. Let's get this real clear. Maybe now, but never before.
If it's an early production amber turn signal one.
Oh, this one was coveted. Built in 1998. It's got the cable throttle and the purda purda
burda. And LSD.
Oh, God.
And the purda purda burda.
Anyway, so this Vesuvio gray metallic was the original color,
which is an awesome color.
It is. The entire engine has had to be rebuilt within the last 3,000 miles. So essentially, they just rebuilt it to sell it. It's got a bunch of stuff. It's got the 996 GT3 style bucket seats.
Cool.
PPF'd and wrapped in mint green.
But he keeps saying how rare the original color is. And then he went and wrapped it in mint green. And what have we said before? Wrapped cars don't sell. Friggin' unwrap it. Everybody wants the Vesuvio color, and then you went and wrapped it in arguably rare and desirable color, but not in a wrap.
No. And he's put these weird wheels. I'm not a fan of the wheels. They're not just not to my taste, I'll say. And the car looks so much better in Vesuvio. I'm a green guy, but this is cool.
Yeah. Well, that's I just thought it was funny that he was touting how rare that color was, and then he goes and covers it up. Yep. My wife is beautiful. She's got amazing freckles. Mary Kay all over. Cover them
shellacked.
Up. Yep. Shellacked. I think of boats when I hear the term shellacked. Or have flashbacks of helping my dad shellack the hull of his wooden boat. Oh, bad times.
Nuts for Sticks is a brand celebrating the manual transmission in all its forms. So forget those flappy paddles because we like shifting ourselves. Check out our fun and funny stick-themed shirts at nutsforsticks.com and save 10% on your order using the discount code SWITCHCAST. That's nutsforsticks.com and use code SWITCHCAST.
I recently returned from a driving trip through northern Scotland.
Yes. How was it?
It was amazing. Oh. And I accidentally started a firestorm of debate and found Scotland's version of the left lane debate.
Oh,
right. So in America, is left it the lane, right is it for lane? Passing, or do I have a right to be there because I'm doing the speed limit and you shouldn't be going faster, or I'm doing five over and nobody should be going faster?
Is it the right lane hogs or
no.
something?
Oh, okay. No, they're very good at passing, overtaking, that whole deal, and very courteous about it too. You can blow somebody's doors off a narrow two-lane road. For the record too, there are very few places where you cannot pass. There are more places to pass on narrow, curvy two-lane roads in Scotland than there are at like an SCCA open track day. It is unreal how much freedom you have, because they basically have like different lengths of hashed lines, and the longer ones mean it's not a good idea to pass here because there's hazards, but if you have a clear line of sight, go for it. And like over blind hills, corners, whatever. And then you have the narrower ones that basically say this is a good passing zone. And then a few places you have a solid line and or chevrons in the middle that's like, yeah, no, you can't pass here.
I love the ability to make your own decision.
We're getting there.
Be intelligent.
We're getting there. There are also almost no stop signs.
It's Is it all like roundabouts?
It's roundabouts, but it's give way. So it's a yield.
Oh.
Now, granted, I did not drive very much in the city. I did drive in Glasgow, but it was mostly in more remote areas. But I think we saw zero stop signs, not a single one. 1,200 miles, zero stop signs.
Are you sure it's just because they're not a different shape and you didn't recognize
it? No, zero.
Oh.
Because they have a solid line instead of a dotted line. So every intersection we came up to had a dotted line. And we're talking like major intersections.
Really?
Yes.
So you're telling me drivers are just way better over there?
Yes. Statistically, they are.
There's a
By per capita, there's, 2.6 deaths per thousand or million or whatever, per million, I think it is. And there's 12 in the U.S. So per capita, there's four times more deaths, road deaths in the U.S. than in the U.K.
Whew.
Per billion miles driven, which is a good metric because in Scotland they drive a lot less, it is about half of what it is here. So Americans do drive more, but still per like actual mile you're on the road, you're twice as likely to be fatalized in a collision in America than you are in the UK. Now, what makes this work and why is this interesting? Because they have far less restrictions. Not only do they have roundabouts and very few traffic lights, hardly any stop signs other than in the cities, they have a national speed limit.
Oh, well, normally we're like, are we okay with that? Like, I feel like all the, I don't know, go on.
So, yes, because it's 70 miles an hour on their highways, their dual carriageways.
Yeah, there we go.
And it's 60 miles an hour everywhere else.
Oh.
But herein lies the debate.
Fast.
Because I made a video about that basically saying like either Scottish drivers are crazy or American drivers suck because we can't have these, we can't make these decisions on our own. We have prohibitively low speed limits. They just have this national speed limit sign. So like through urban areas, it'll be 20, 30, 40 as marked, and then it just goes back to the national speed limit. But it's up to the drivers to decide what is safe. And if you are driving unsafely or cause a wreck, you will get cited for reckless driving. But it's not based on the speed itself. It is based on you being a knob.
he's been over there. I do really like this, though, because like that's would make sense then why they have so much passing ability, because if you are capable or prepared or whatever to drive faster, you should be able to get around somebody who wants to drive slower without, like, I don't know, honking and being mad about it. Just let them do their thing and you can do your thing.
Exactly.
This seems great.
It is great. It is great. Up to the national speed limit, right? So in more rural areas and not on the motorways, you do have this incredible freedom of I can drive as fast as I believe is safe, because most of those roads, I would never exceed the speed limit. There's a few wide open ones that you're like, all right, I'm going to hammer it. And especially like when you're passing somebody or stuff like that, like they're going 50, you're like, all right, I got to do 70 to get by them.
Yeah.
But the contrast there is on the motorways, once you exceed the speed limit, they have very draconian enforcement and penalties. They have cameras everywhere.
Okay.
They have like a national database of like these cameras. So if you are, say, doing like a cannonball and you keep triggering the cameras, it'll alert them, be like, this same license plate has triggered a bunch of cameras. Oh. So if you get pulled over and you've also gotten like triggered a bunch of cameras that same day and you get pulled over for speeding, they can pull that up immediately in their system and be like, oh, okay, you're going to jail.
Ooh.
And the penalties are incredibly severe.
Yeah.
And they're working on a new system now whereby if you keep triggering these things, it will actually alert somebody and they'll send out a cop to arrest you. Yikes. Based on you speeding past these cameras. So
yikes.
They have this balance of incredible freedom and yet draconian enforcement, which America is the opposite. We have restrictions everywhere, right? 35, 25, 45. Like, you can't make up your mind. You have to come to a complete stop at this four-way stop, even though there's only two cars there and you're all sitting there twiddling your thumbs going, who's going next? And we have traffic lights everywhere. But then if you want to cannonball across the country or go 140 miles an hour in a 75, you get a bad ticket. You might go to jail, but you get out and it's like you get a slap on the wrist. There's really no bad penalties for excessive speeding here. So it's a both and. But what I love about the freedom there is there's this underlying philosophy that drivers are encouraged, trained, and allowed to make a value decision on what is the appropriate speed for a given situation. Because anywhere they actually reduce the speed limit to like 30 through a town, I'm like, yeah, 30 is good. Yeah. I'm actually good with this. This makes sense.
Well, because, and especially because a lot of the towns I've seen videos or photos of in Scotland, they're tiny. You really don't want to drive that fast. People are parked on the side of the street. People are walking around. Like, it's just not safe.
Right. And they're very, very narrow.
Yes.
Very narrow lane. 7.5 feet, I think.
Ooh, so,
it felt
so
like my mirrors were over the line all the time.
But I like that there are so many roads around us that we enjoy driving on that I don't think I would want to get hit 60 on in most places. But having the freedom to make an educated decision about what else is on the roadway, you know, people or animals, or like how light is it outside? What can I see? Being able to make that decision to either get to my destination in a reasonable time or honestly just have a good time. That's mostly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Still within the legal limit. Like, I would appreciate that so much. There are so many opportunities to get in a lot of trouble when you are literally affecting nobody.
Yeah. And the roads here are infinitely better. I mean, some of the roads there that had the national speed limit were literally single lane roads. They're called single track roads, wild. And they have a little pull off passing place every 100 yards or so. Oof. And I mean, you couldn't go 60 everywhere. And when I made my little short video about it, I swear it must have made its way onto a Facebook group of Karens in Northern Scotland, because there was a disproportionate number of females that came out like with claws bared for me on this video. It was insane. One lady actually ironically named Karen corrected me about the national speed limit. She said the national, I said it was 60. She said it's 70. And I was referring to the road in particular, because in that scenario it was 60. And so I just responded, well, actually on motorways it's 70 and on everywhere else it's 60. And she goes, thanks for mansplaining.
Nice.
I'm like, yeah, your name's Karen. This is too easy. This is too easy. You can't make it up. But just the courtesy that they have over there, they will pull over for slower traffic so that you can pass. Whereas in America, it's like this antagonistic thing. You're in the left lane of a 12 lane highway and somebody wants to go faster than you. And you're like, I'm going to slow down and hold them up. And it's just, it's the freedom that they have over there and the weight of let's drive well. I felt that weight when I went there, but it was also incredibly freeing. And I'm like, my theory of you could do away with speed limits if you actually instilled a sense of responsibility and skill into drivers to be able to make these value decisions and actually judge their surroundings. Like we could eliminate speed limits everywhere, but never going to happen. Even in Scotland, they're actually trying to do the reverse. Like this video I did sparked so much debate over there. Like between the people going, 60s amateur hour, try 80, get out of our way. And all of the literal and figurative Karens who are like, we got all these ralliers tearing up our roads. They're a danger, blah, blah, blah. So yeah, they've got their own controversy over there. But to your earlier point, talking about like trying to enjoy roads, my wife got pulled over the other day. She never gets pulled over. She's not gotten pulled over since we met.
Is she still struggling with it?
No.
Should I?
She was going allegedly 50 in a 35 in like almost man away, like in the country.
Sure, who cares?
Wide road, lots of shoulder, nobody around, just the cop sitting there. And by the time he pulled her over, I think it was already 45. And it's not because the road became better or safer or wider. It's the same number of driveways and houses. In fact, at the county line or whatever it was, the road got worse and more bumpy.
Yes, it does.
The only difference was a different jurisdiction.
Yeah.
It's 35 here, it's 45 here. Not because of road conditions, because of governing body.
Yes. And there are so many roads where the speed limit goes up and down and hurt, but between here and your shop, there's one that like
82, 35, 45, 50, 55, 35 in like 2 miles.
It's so dumb. Like, oh my gosh.
So Scotland,
I've gotten pulled over on that road before for passing somebody going 65. He's like, well, when you pass somebody that speed, you're the problem. And it was two people on the road.
No, I'm going to take my time to pass people.
Yeah.
No, because that's real safe. I'm going to camp out on the wrong side of the road. Yeah. We're not allowed to make our own decisions, and that frustrates me. Scotland was freeing in that respect, at least within the scope of the national speed limit. It was beautiful. Their roads sucked, but they still have the ability to make their own decisions. I wish we had that here. North Dakota. In related news, North Dakota is raising its highway speed limit to 80 miles an hour on most interstates.
That's like the turnpike around here.
People go like 70, but you won't likely get popped unless you're doing at least 80 to match South Dakota and Montana. According to Motor1.com, South Dakota raised its limit to 80 in 2015, and there's been no appreciable change in crashes or fatalities since then. Mic drop. So there.
If only that could be the end of the episode. We got another segment to do, Doug.
Well, you know, speaking of getting pulled over based on your license plates, we love our vanity plates. Ooh. And the plate to sample game is back for another season, brought to you by soulandspine.com. If you're crooked, get straightened out at Soul and Spine.
Can I go first?
Sure.
It's just very relevant to what we've been talking about.
The name of the game for new listeners is, we don't try to guess the meaning that's usually patently obvious. We try to guess what car it's on. How well can we judge stereotypes?
Yes. If you would like to submit your vanity plates to me, Doug is way more popular and way more cool than I am. So a lot of people just send them over through whatever social media platform. You can head on over to switchcast.live and there is a form to submit vanity plates so that I can challenge Doug. There is a lot of great submissions. There's a backlog from last season. So I promise I'm working through them. I'm getting to them. I did put three of my own that I saw in the last week into this.
Oh, it was so you're like, more important than the listeners. I see. Their plates weren't good enough, didn't cut the mustard, so you found your own.
No, they were presented to me.
Tyler's a man of the people here.
No, Doug. They were presented to me, and I have to get them out of here because they're so good.
We'll see about that.
To jail is the first one.
Hellcat, jailbreak.
Nope. That would have been good, though. That would have been good.
I had that. Is it a mock, like a retired police cruiser, a Ford police interceptor or something like that?
It's a Crown Vic police interceptor with still had the fog lights on it and the black wheels and everything and blew past me on the highway.
Yeah. All right. Here should be an easy one. CHKENG, check engine.
It's a Volkswagen of some sort. It's a Golf, maybe?
Yeah.
The GTI?
In a different body.
In a different body. Is it an Audi?
Audi.
A nice, like an A3?
Audi TT.
TT. Oh, ooh, yeah. Yep,
yeah.
Yep.
I don't know if it's 3.2 or the 1.8T, but either way, it's accurate.
My buddy's got a Golf R, and we send each other check engine light memes all the time. The next one, keeping with the same sort of vibe, I'm for cops.
Ooh, a bootlicker.
And I got to tell you, this is not the car I expected.
The
dude
right.
looked like what I expected.
Like
acid washed boot cut jeans with cowboy boots and long silver, like shoulder length silver
Hummer
hair.
H1.
No.
Acid wash.
I didn't help you at all.
Hummer H2. Dodge Viper GTS.
Slightly closer. This was in a spotless 350Z convertible on aftermarket chrome wheels.
All right. Well, it can't go fast enough to run from any cops. So I guess.
What are you doing in this?
Yeah. All right. Here's one. VTARD. VTARD. VTARD.
Can you use it in a sentence, please?
You're a VTARD if you try to race me?
What could that possibly mean? If your sentence is anything to go by, what is this? A Mustang of some sort, like a muscle car? Is it a Challenger? Is it a Viper?
I'm amazed that this one stumped you. It is a Cadillac CTS.
Oh, well.
V.
Doug, in my defense, it's been a minute since we've done this.
Okay. Well,
I needed to warm up my engine.
Maybe you
again.
Need that plate.
Next for you is Mtalica. Mtalica.
It's either somebody with a very metallic paint on their car or a fan of the band, obviously, which
you know,
I don't know how you would guess. Is it a Ford Transit van and they have a cover band?
No, I don't actually know what the color of this car was. It might be that situation. This was on a kind of tricked out Hummer H2 pickup truck that was like blue and it had blue taillight covers and like blue.
I wouldn't have got that.
And it was like
years.
the spare tire on the bay. It was a whole situation.
All right. Here's one for you. If it'll open. Slim Shady.
Oh, goodness. I don't know what he drives.
It's not him.
No.
It's not the real Slim Shady.
Is this a Nissan Altima?
This guy is not getting that many royalty checks. It's not a Nissan Altima.
Is it a Chrysler 300?
No.
Is it like, I don't know, whatever a base E-Class
Similar
is?
Similar track. It's Ford Escape.
Oh, wow. It's a refrigerator.
It's not even in Michigan. It's in Ontario. Nice. Maybe they're across the border from Detroit.
Yeah.
They live on 8 kilometer.
This guy.
Off the cuff.
All right, we got to get out of this. Barry M. submitted Anger Management, AGRMGMT.
Nissan Xterra.
No.
Do you know why I guessed that?
No, please explain.
The Office, Andy Bernard drove a Nissan Xterra when he went to Anger Management.
Oh, that is a deep cut reference. I don't think I ever remembered what he drove.
All right, well, it's got to be a performance car then because it gets your anger out. Dodge Viper.
Close.
Cammed Corvette.
It is a Corvette C06. C5. I don't know if it's cammed or anything, but
we're
it had
say
some
it's
mods.
Cammed. All right.
It is a C5 Corvette.
That's not bad.
That was good. That was good.
All right. Oh, it's my turn.
Riding so high.
Walta. WALTUH. Walta.
Oh, that is an Aztec.
Yes.
Yeah, there it is.
Nice. Nice.
I am the one who knocks. Alrighty, last one for you, Doug. Write off, R-I-T-E-O-F-F.
Is it one of them leased Ferraris we were talking about?
You're not far off.
Write off. Mercedes, big body sedan. Or no. It'd be a 6K, 6,000 plus pound vehicle because it's accelerated depreciation. But somebody that's like taking advantage of it. So it's either a Mercedes G-Wagon or a Range Rover.
It is an Urus. Same thing, though. Same
on the right track. On the right track. Okay, I'm giving myself half a point for that. Half a shroot buck. Okay, last one. California plate, striped.
Striped. Okay. What is this, like a Mustang?
No.
Something that has like racing stripes on it? Is that this kind of vibe?
Maybe.
Because like the
or
cop
they crap
car-
their pants.
The cop cars over there don't have like stripes or anything on them. They're pretty simple, so it's not going to be like a police cruiser. I'm going to guess a Viper. I'm going to go with racing stripes.
Ferrari 360 Challenge Stradale, which had the optional tricolore racing stripe.
That's, I accept.
High value on the resale now because it's rare. Like a Corvette. Switch Cars is the enthusiast dealership where we buy, sell, consign, service, and store only cars that we like ourselves. Well, we'll store anything that pays the bill, except EVs. We're not going to store EVs, and we definitely don't sell them either. Anyway, check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com and mention discount code SWITCHCAST for your special pricing. That's right, check out our handpicked inventory at switchcars.com. Thank you for joining us for SwitchCast with Doug Tabbitt and Tyler Sanders, produced by Ethan Huffnagel. SwitchCast is an automotive entertainment and opinion show, and nothing we say should be taken very seriously. We do not give tax, investment, legal, emotional, or professional advice, and the only licenses we hold are driver's licenses. The opinions expressed on this show are exclusively held by the people pontificating at that moment and do not reflect the values of our producers or sponsors. Our theme music is provided by Emily and Ivory. You can stream their full album on Spotify or SoundCloud. If you like this show, you can stream it in its entirety on your favorite audio podcast platform. Check out switchcast.live for more info.